Good morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama is Pei Zayin. Thank you, Lupin Foundation, for sponsorship of the daf is on the Zeichon Ishmael Flippi Gabriel of Shmuel. We're going to begin the Gemara today on Pei Vav and Beis, starting with the Mishnah on the very top of the Amud, HaMevayish Es HaArum. We are discussing the Chavala, when a person damages, injures another person. The first Mishnah in the 8th Perek of Baba Kama taught us that that there are five payments that one has to make when doing damage to another person. Including those damages is nezik, is depreciation, shevis, ripu and shevis, both the medical bills and the workers' compensation while he's recovering. And then there are two other payments that come as well, tsar, the pain, and boshus, and that of embarrassment. Embarrassment, the assessment of embarrassment is tricky. The Mishnah just simply told us that there's some sort of sliding scale when you are trying to measure for embarrassment. The Mishnah just simply says you have to look at the status of the one who is doing the embarrassing and the one who is receiving the embarrassment. We learned in yesterday's daf that this is subject to a machlokas tanaim, exactly how to, not exactly, but more or less how to measure busha. Whatever the case is, if you embarrass somebody, so there has to be some sort of financial compensation for the embarrassment that the person endured. We're going to be continuing now in the Mishnah on Pei Vav Amud Beis, and we're going to be discussing the possibility that maybe some people are going to be exempt from busha, a possibility, although the Mishnah doesn't really discuss much in terms of who actually is going to be who is going to be exempt, but the Mishnah at least entertains the notion. So let's say you embarrass somebody who's naked. Now, somebody who's naked is somebody who clearly is not worried about their embarrassment. So to say now that that person's running around naked and, well, you embarrassed him, the argument could be, and it's a very strong argument, look, I know I embarrassed him, but truth of the matter is, could you please look at him? Well, please don't look at him, but in other words, he's obviously does not care about his embarrassment. Why should I need to pay any financial compensation for the embarrassment? That's it's a good question. We're going to come back to that question in just a bit. So, let's say you embarrass somebody who's blind. Let's say you embarrass somebody who's sleeping. In all these cases, you're going to be liable. Okay, so although you can construct an argument, and certainly by the case of someone who is naked, but you can construct an argument that maybe these people are not those who suffer embarrassment. Nevertheless, the Mishnah is telling us all these people are still subject to being embarrassed, and therefore, if you embarrass them, you're going to be financially liable. V'yashin shebi'esh patur. Let's say you're sleeping, and while sleeping, so unconsciously, during your sleep, you embarrass somebody else. You roll over, and somehow you awkwardly embarrass somebody else. So the Mishnah says, patur, you're going to be exempt, because again, even though, adamu l'olam, even though we've said, since the beginning of the Masechta, nearly the beginning of the Masechta, that when a person damages another person, doesn't matter whether it was intentional or unintentional, we're not talking about the payment of damage, we're talking about the payment of busha. And I made this point yesterday, I'm going to reiterate again today. Busha is only going to be obligated if you were intent on embarrassing somebody else. If you were not intent on embarrassing somebody else, there's no payment of busha. So here the person is sleeping. So if he injured somebody, if he caused any type of nezek, he's going to be obligated. But we're not talking about nezek, we're talking about busha, and therefore he's going to be exempt. Let's say a person falls off the roof and lands on somebody awkwardly. So not only does he damage the person, but he also embarrasses the person. So again, the same point we're going to make again. And that is that on the damages he's obligated to pay, but not on the busha. Because he wasn't intent on embarrassing the person. And the Mishnah says, the only time that a person is going to be obligated to pay for the busha is only when he was intent on embarrassing somebody. The Gemara quotes a brisa. If I embarrass somebody who is unclothed, so I'm going to be obligated. But the brisa acknowledges that it's not going to be the same level of financial obligation as somebody who's clothed. Meaning somebody who's not clothed obviously already took away some of his own busha. So therefore, when I embarrass him, even though I am obligated, but the brisa admits, not to the same degree as somebody who has clothing on. I embarrass somebody in the bathhouse. Now, somebody in the bathhouse is also not clothed. So again, I'm obligated, even though they're acknowledging the fact that, oh, look, he's in the bathhouse, he doesn't have clothing on, he already has removed some of his own busha, but still, I'm obligated to pay some busha. Ad kan dibra abraisa, the Gemara now discusses. Amar amar baisho arum chayav arum bar boshesu. The Gemara asked incredulously, if you have a person who's running around naked, he clearly does not care about his own boshes. Why, if I embarrass him? No, I shouldn't. That's not the point. Of course I shouldn't. But why, if I embarrass him, do I have to make any type of compensation of embarrassment? This guy clearly does not care about his own embarrassment, so why do I have to pay him? So Amar papa my avram de asa zika karchinu lemaneva asahu dalina tvei ubayshe. So the Gemara says that when the Bryce is talking about somebody who's running around naked, it does not mean that he intentionally removed all of his clothing and ran around. Sounds like from the Gemara's answer that if that were to happen, then there would be no busha, because he has clearly taken care, he simply does not care about his own busha. We're talking about a scenario in which the guy's walking, a wind comes and hikes up his whatever they wore back then, tunic, toga, whatever you want to call it. So in other words, he is now walking around quote unquote naked, but naked in the sense that it's not intentional. He just simply, a wind comes in and lifts up his toga. And then you figure, oh, look, you know what? That's already funny enough as it is. Let me add to the humor, and you lift it up even a little bit more. So even though he already is in a position, a compromised position of being embarrassed, but if you add to the embarrassment, so then you're going to be chayav. That's what the Bryce is dealing with. We're on to the second part of the Braisa, where I embarrass somebody in a bathhouse. So the Gemara says, Beis HaMerchatz Bar Boshesu. So the Gemara says again, the same basic point. You have now, you're walking around together with people who have stripped down to nothing. And so therefore, they clearly have forgotten their busha. So if I embarrass them anymore, so I'm going to be chayev. So Amar Papa Shabaisho Agavanar. So the Gemara says, we're at the bank of the river. By the bank of the river, people are still a little bit discreet, even as they are taking off the clothing, and so therefore there's still some semblance of busha, and therefore I have to pay for the busha that I've done. Gemara here asks a question. Let's say I embarrass somebody who's sleeping. Now, we already learned back in the Mishnah that if I embarrass somebody who's sleeping, so then that is considered an embarrassment, and I'm going to have to pay for the busha. But the Gemara over here adds another detail to this question. What if I embarrass somebody who's sleeping, and then he dies in his sleep and he doesn't wake up? I know that was redundant. Okay, so And now he never learns about the embarrassment. Meaning, Gemara is going to spell out the question. Look, we know there's a payment in the Torah called boshas. Okay, we learned it from the pasuk of Vekatzotzas Kapa, right? We discussed this yesterday. We know there's a payment of boshas. But the Gemara says, but if we could try to further define exactly what boshas is, it could be one of two possibilities. Number one, says the Gemara, it could be kisuf. It could be the actual embarrassment. It's that feeling, that sense, that internal sense of embarrassment that a person feels when he's being embarrassed. So hamisle, so the Gemara says, velesle kisufa. So the Gemara says, okay, but over here, it's true you embarrassed him while he was sleeping, but because he was sleeping, he didn't know about it, and he didn't learn about it because, unfortunately, he died in his sleep. So, if he never learned about it, he never experienced that inner internal sense of embarrassment. So over here, you're off the hook on this payment because he died in his sleep, and he never learned about it. Or no. Maybe the payment of embarrassment comes from the fact that, not that he feels or senses that internal sense of embarrassment, but it has to do with the fact that you have devalued him. Because you embarrassed him, so now he's reduced as a result of your embarrassment. So over here, somebody's sleeping, you embarrass somebody who's sleeping, so there's still a reduction. There's still zilusa, you have reduced his value. Other people see exactly what you did to him while he's sleeping, so now people will think less of him as a result of that. So therefore, there has been a reduction. And maybe that's why there's a boshas payment. So even if you were to embarrass him while he was sleeping, and even if he died in his sleep, and even though he never experienced that internal sense of busha, but you've reduced him, and therefore you have to pay for the boshas. So the Gemara says, Vaha Ozlei. So in this case, you did in fact embarrass him in the sense that you've reduced him.
But if he's dead, who's going to complain?
It's not a question of complaining. We're talking about financial payment over here. This is strictly a money discussion. So if, in other words, if in fact you embarrassed him, and this does qualify as embarrassment, so you have to pay. And to the question of who you're going to pay the estate. Because now it's now an obligation. So Tashma the Gemara says, come in here, Rabbi Meir Omer Darsh, Cheshva Katni Yishlam Boshas, Shotein La Boshas. So the Gemara quotes the Brisa. The Brisa says that both a Cheresh and a Katan are subject to Busha, but a Shota, but an insane person, a deranged person, is not subject to Boshas. And the Gemara now goes on to explain, the Gemara says, look, if it's a question of reducing somebody because of the embarrassment, so the Gemara says, perfect, I understand the Brisa implicitly. Because over here we're talking about a minor, and again, the Gemara's assumption throughout Shas is that a minor does not have the cognitive ability to understand. So therefore, you don't have, by the katan, you don't have this internal sense of being embarrassed, but you certainly have him being reduced, meaning if you embarrass somebody, you have him being reduced. So the Gemara says, so if Boshes is a function of Zilusa, if it's a function of reducing somebody, devaluing somebody, so the Gemara says, so fine, so then I understand how there is such a thing as Boshes as it relates to a katan. But the Gemara says, but if it's a question of an internal sense of embarrassment, katan bar Boshes, is a minor going to be subject to Boshes? Is he going to have that internal sense of embarrassment? So the Gemara says, Elamai Mishum Zilusa. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. You want to make the argument? That's fine. But the Gemara says, but let's go. Let's follow through with the argument. You want to tell me now that embarrassment is a function of being reduced, of reducing somebody's value. So the Gemara says, Afilu Shotanami. So the Gemara says, well, what about the Shota? Someone who's deranged, someone who's insane. So you want to make the argument that he doesn't have that feeling, that internal sense, that internal feeling of embarrassment. You want to make that argument? Okay, but the Gemara says, but reduction, what do you mean if somebody's a Shota? Are you not reducing him when you're embarrassing him? So the Gemara says, to that point, Amri, the Gemara says that the answer, Shota ain l'chaboshas gedolah mizeh. So the Gemara says, no, when it comes to a Shota, there's no further possible way that you can reduce him. In other words, he's an insane person, he's a deranged person, and so therefore, even if boshas is a function of zilusa, you can't go any further down than that. So mikamakom nifshaminada misham zilusahu. So the Gemara says, so now let's come back to our point, which is that there is embarrassment as it relates to a katan. And again, given that there are two options, either it's kisufa or zilusa, it's an internal sense of embarrassment, or it's a reducing of his value, by virtue of the fact that there is such a thing of embarrassment as it relates to a child, to a minor, it must mean that this is all a function of zilusa. The Gemara says, can't you make that argument? The imishim kisufa, katan bar kisufahu. The Gemara just simply reiterates its question. If it's embarrassment, the katan does not have that internal sense of being embarrassed. So the Gemara says, "Kedamar Papa demechlimulu lemechlam hachinami demechlimulu mechlam." This is the phrase that we ended yesterday's daf with. The Gemara now reiterates this statement to Rav Papa, and that's the following: look, a katan may have an internal sense of embarrassment. Now, maybe as a katan, the katan does not understand. And, right, he doesn't have the cognitive ability. But if you remind him later in life, "Hey, remember when you were a kid? And remember what we did to you, or remember what he did to you." So then, at a later point in time, there is going to be that embarrassment. Meaning, it's a latent embarrassment that will be realized later. So the Gemara says, so we could still make the argument that embarrassment really is kisufa. It is an internal sense of being embarrassed. And even by a minor, he's going to experience it. Maybe not now, but it's there and it's planted and the seed has been planted. And he'll realize it later on. And so the Gemara says, so we don't have, right now, a compelling argument to say that embarrassment is either kisufa or zilusa. So the Gemara says, maybe we're going to ask the same question again, but we're going to analyze it a little bit differently. Our question was, I married somebody who's sleeping, and then he dies in his sleep. So, am I obligated for the payment of boshes, yes or no? So, the one way we presented the question of whether or not embarrassment is a function of being embarrassed, the internal sense of being embarrassed, which this person did not have, or is it zilusa? Is it the fact that I'm reducing him, I'm devaluating him, which I am? So that's one way to analyze the question, and the Gemara is now going to present a second way to analyze the question, and that's the following. Hachi kamibayile mishum kisufa didehu v'hamaisle. On one hand, is embarrassment an internal sense of being embarrassed, which this person did not experience, and therefore you don't have to pay? Odioma mishum boshes mishpacha. Or the Gemara says, no, maybe embarrassment is a function of, I embarrassed him in the context of his family. Meaning, think of what his mother's going to say, think about what his father's going to say, or how they're going to feel. Think of how all the family is going to feel as a result of this person being embarrassed. So the Gemara says, if that's the way to understand boshes, so then if I embarrass somebody while he's sleeping, even though he himself did not experience that internal sense of being embarrassed, but still there was embarrassment to the family, and therefore I would have to pay. Tashma, the Gemara is going to quote the Braisa, and we're going to do the same thing again, quoting the Braisa and analyzing it in the context of the Braisa. Both a deaf mute and a minor is subject to the busha payment if they're embarrassed. However, an insane person is not subject to the busha payment. The Gemara makes the same argument again, and that is that if boshes is an internal sense of being embarrassed, a minor does not have that internal sense, so it must be that it's pegam mishpacha, it's the boshes mishpacha. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, you're embarrassing the family. Well, if somebody's a shota, even though the shota himself does not have that experience of being embarrassed, but still, the shota's got family members, and they're going to be embarrassed. So the Gemara's answer, shota in lechabosh, is gedola mizah. But the Gemara says, no, when it comes to a shota, the fact that he's a shota, there's no greater embarrassment than that in of itself. That's already enough embarrassment. So mikoma kom nifsha mina de mishum boshes mishpacha de mishum kisufa kam bar kisufa hu. So again, the Gemara just reiterates the question of if boshes is a function of being internally embarrassed. A child is not internally embarrassed; he doesn't have the internal sense. I'm rapapa in de mechlimo le umechlim. So now, for a third time on this daf of Gemara, the Gemara quotes rapapa's statement that even though currently the child may not fully sense that embarrassment, but it's there and it's latent. And if you remind him later in life, do you remember what we did to you? And remember how this was so funny? So he's going to experience that sense of embarrassment later in life. And the Gemara says, and we could still make the argument that busha is a function of an internal sense of embarrassment, and we could still make the argument that the child is going to suffer it, if not now, at a later point in time. V'hatanya, the Gemara quotes a braisa. Rabbi Omer, and Rashi points out over here, this is not a question, this is a punctuation to our discussion. Rabbi Omer, cheresh yesh laboshes, shoten laboshes. A cheresh is subject to busha. A shota is not subject to busha. Okay, and then katan, pamim yeshlo, pamim elo. And as far as the katan, sometimes yes, sometimes no. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. What did the Braisa mean by that last statement? So the Gemara says, well, what does that mean? It means, like Rav Papa told us already once yesterday, twice today. And that is that if at a later point in time you were to remind him about the embarrassing moment that we just went through, so then he's going to be embarrassed, and therefore that is considered boshes, even if he experienced it as a minor. If, however, at a later point in time you remind him and he doesn't remember, so then there's not going to be boshes. So the Gemara says, this is supportive of Rav Papa, this idea that even though currently the minor is not experiencing embarrassment, but if you remind him at a later point in time and it'll embarrass him, so that it counts as being embarrassment.
Why is the subject of secondary embarrassment is not discussed? Just like you mentioned, the father for his son, if his son is child.
Right, so the... So
did they have to get paid? Also, they're getting embarrassment.
Well, that's right. And to that, I think the best way, or not the best way, I don't know, let's not go that far. The easiest way to answer that, that's grumma, meaning that's not direct, that's indirect. So we don't pay for grumma victimization. Okay, Hamavayshus Asuma. I embarrass somebody who's blind. Masisin Delo Kereb Yehuda. Our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, this is it. Gemara Baba Kama Daf Pei Vavam Beis. We are here, and this is a very famous. I don't know how very famous it is. But we're going to try to make it famous right now. The very famous sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. The Rabbi Yehuda is going to basically say that a blind person is going to be exempt from all the mitzvahs in the Torah. Later on, I'll just point in the right direction in terms of Tosos. Tosos says if it's a grand position of Rabbi Yehuda that he's going to be exempt from all mitzvahs in the Torah, it seems to be that we are... I'm going to discuss that. So if that's true, so then our Gemara over here seems to be a little nitpicky in terms of talking about the payment of embarrassment if he's embarrassed. Okay, seems to be a little bit nitpicky. I'll point to Tosus later on. But really, Shitas Rav Yehuda is that a blind person is mufka. He's totally removed from the mitzvahs in the Torah. So... And our Mishnah does not subscribe to that viewpoint. Well, how do I know that? Because our Mishnah says that if a blind person is embarrassed, so then there is going to be a payment. In other words, he is included in dinim, in monetary law. And let's see the Gemara. As the Gemara spells it, the Gemara lays it all out. Masizna loka Rav Yehuda d'tanya Rav Yehuda omer suma in lo boshes. A suma is not subject to busha. It's not because you can't embarrass them. Of course you can embarrass somebody who's blind. But because he's blind, so status-wise, he is mufka, he's removed from dinim of the Torah. V'kachay Rav Yehuda potem mechai v'galios, u mechai v'malkios, u mechai v'misus beisdin. And Rav Yehuda exempts him from everything, meaning from exile, from receiving malkus, from chiv and Mrs. Bezdin, from capital punishment. My time to Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says, and the basis of this is drushas, meaning it's not going to be a good why, meaning you can give a nice svara if you'd like, but you can, but the Gemara is not going to base it on a svara. The Gemara is going to base it on drushas, on simple drushas, according to Rav Yehuda. So Gemara inecha inecha me'edim zomemim. So we're going to learn now gzera shava. Now ma ha'asam sumem lo. Now when it comes to edim zomemim, a blind person cannot serve as a witness. Now I'll ask the question, because I know Rashi coming up that I'm going to show you in just a moment. I'll ask the question, why can't a blind person be a witness? Okay, it's kind of a funny question because intuitively you think you know the answer. I think I know the answer. Rashi writes, look at the Rashi. Divrei Amaskel Delokar Rav Yehuda, I'm going to skip to the end of the Rashi. So EF Shabbat to be in and Re'ia. So you can't have a blind person being a witness because you need to see. So Rashi writes, it's a pretty compelling argument. So Rashi says that, well, if you can't see the crime being done, so how could you possibly testify? So that is Rashi over here. For more discussion on why a blind person can't testify, what else could possibly be the explanation of why a blind person can't testify? But if you want to see more on that, so there's a Rabbi Kiva Eger over here, there's a Tosis and Baba Basra, there is more on this topic of blind people not testifying. But anyway, for our purposes, we could just say it very simply, very succinctly, a blind person cannot testify. So once we're here, back to the Gemara, avhacha sumim lo, I'm sorry, so edim zomimim, mahasam sumim lo, avhacha sumim lo. So if that's true by edim zomimim, and we have a gzera shava linking it to busha, meaning Rashi goes through the psukim inside, there's a commonality of words, so we have now gzera shava linking it to busha. Once a blind person is excluded from testifying, a blind person is also excluded from busha. And mechavi galios de tanya, and then as far as the obligation to be sent into exile if they are involved in wrongful manslaughter, in wrongful death. The tanya below Raos Pratlis Suma Div Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda excludes them from exile, from Gullus. Rabbi Meir Omer L'Rabba says a Suma. And Rabbi Meir says no. That if a blind person is responsible for the wrongful death of a person, so he's going to be sent into exile. My time is Rav Yehuda. Amalacha. Now as far as the reason behind Rav Yehuda, so the Gemara says it's based on a drasha. Vasher Yavo Esreehu by Ya'ar, and he comes upon his friend in the forest. Lachtov Eitzim. Ve'afilu Suma Kasa Rachmana. So and that would mean even a blind person, because the Torah does not discriminate. And meanwhile, below Ra'os, and then the Torah says, and he didn't see. So Lemu'ute. So that comes to now exclude the Suma because he's never had the ability to see to begin with. And Rameir Kasa Rachmana below Ra'os Lemu'ute. So Rameir will darshan in the following manner. Below Ra'os is coming to exclude the blind person. Uksiv Rachmana Bivli Das. And then the Torah says, unintentional. So that's another Mi'ut. And we have a general principle in darshaning. When you have a Mi'ut followed by another Mi'ut, so it has an opposite effect. It actually serves as a rebuy. So lemute have a mirachamir, vein mirachamir el rabos. So therefore it's coming to include. So according to Reb Meir, a blind person is included in the parsha of Galus, and he is going to be sent to exile if he's responsible for the wrongful death of somebody else. Rav Yehuda, he bevlidas, problem is kavin hudasa. And as far as Rav Yehuda's concerned, his counter argument is, I already have a drasha for the bevlidas, and that is, if it was intentional. If it was intentional, he's not going to be sent into exile. Chayve Mises Beis Din, Asya Rotzeach Rotzeach. Now, as far as capital crime, so we're going to have Gzeira Shava from Galus to Ritzicha. I'm sorry, Rotzeach Rotzeach Mechayve Galios, and Chayve Malkus, and the fact that a blind person is not going to be subject to getting lashes, Asya Rasha Rasha Mechayve Mises Beis Din. So we have another Gzeira Shava linking the words Rasha from capital crime to Malkus, and therefore not going to be subject to Malkus as well. Tanya Yidach, we quote another Braisa. So far, on the list of, according to Rabbi Yehuda, mind you, this is all according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, a blind person suffer has been excluded from the payment of embarrassment, Edom Zomimim, Chayve Galios, Chayve Mises Beisdin, Chayve Malkios. Okay, and then we're just going to push it to all the way to the end. Tanya Yidach, the Gemara is going to quote another Brice, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Sumei in law Boshes V'chein Haya Rabbi Yehuda Potro Mikol Dinim Shebetara. Truth be told, Rabbi Yehuda excludes the blind person from any of the halachas of the Torah, any of the laws of the Torah. My time with Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a krav v'shavtu ha'eda bein ha-makeh v'ein gol hadam. Al mishpatim ha'ela, kol she'eshno b'makeh v'gol hadam, yeshno b'mishpatim, kol she'eino b'makeh u'v'gol hadam, eino b'mishpatim. Anyone who is not subject to hitting, somebody who is not subject to a redeemer, meaning is excluded from the parsha of Galus, is not going to be included mishpatim in monetary law. Tanya Yidach, the Gemara quotes another bracer, Rav Yehuda Omer, Sumei in law Boshes. A blind person is not subject to Busha, v'chein hayu Rav Yehuda pochem mikol mitzvos amurs b'Torah. And he's excluded from the mitzvos of the Torah. Previously we talked about the dinim, the monetary law. Here now we're talking about the mitzvos. So Amar Rav Shisha b'Rav Ravidi, my time with Rav Yehuda, on what basis is that? Amar Krav, ve'elam mitzvos, hachukim v'amishpatim. These are the mitzvos, the chukim, and the mishpatim. Last week's parsha. Kol she'eshem b'mishpatim, yeshem b'mitzvos v'chukim, v'chol she'eino b'mishpatim, eino b'mitzvos v'chukim. Okay. We have now a number of drushas that tell us that Rav Yehuda has a blind person excluded. And Tosus points out, it's Tosus on the previous Amud, towards the bottom. Tosus divrei maslo sumein lo boshes. Where it seems to be that once Rabbi Yehuda has him excluded from all mitzvahs in the Torah, it seems to be a little bit strange that we're also excluding him from the payment of boshes, or you know, from the from edus. It seems to be like we start with the small, and then we get to the really big points. And once you know the big points, so why did you need to point out the small points? Anyway. That is Shitas Rav Yehuda, and then the Gemara tells us another story, which I'd say is famous. You'll hear the story often. It's quoting the Gemara twice, once in Kedushin, another time here. Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is one of the two famous blind Amoraim. Rav Yosef is one, Rav Sheshis is the other. Rav Yosef was blind. He actually experienced an illness in life, and it caused him to lose his sight. So Rav Yosef now is blind, and where did he stand on the issue of whether a blind person is chayv in the mitzvahs in Torah or not chayv in the mitzvahs in Torah? So now we know that it's a machlokas tanaim. Rav Yehuda says that he's exempt from every one of the mitzvahs in the Torah, and the other tanaim, I could point to Rav Meir, right? He was brought out over here, but other tanaim are of the opinion that they're obligated. So Rav Yosef, where did he stand on this issue? Well, he had an interest. He had obviously a rooting interest. Where was his rooting interest? This is where it gets interesting. Rav Yosef Mireish. I'm sorry. I'm Rav Yosef Mireish Avamina. So Rav Yosef says, originally I thought Man Damar Alach Rav Yehuda Damar Suma Patam in the Mitzvot Kav Dina Yumatava LeRabbanan. If somebody were to tell me that the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda, so I would sponsor this Shabbos's Kiddush, and I would have it would be a great Kiddush. I'd make it deluxe, and I'd invite everybody, and we'd have the greatest time. My timer. Now, not for the reason that a person would normally think, and that is okay. Then that way he'd be off the hook. So no, this is Rav Yosef. This is an Amora. This is a person who's interested in perfecting himself. So the reason why he wants the halacha to be like Rav Yehuda is the lo mifkadin v'kav dina mitzvos, because now he's doing the mitzvos voluntarily, and he thought originally that doing the mitzvos voluntarily is exactly what the doctor ordered. He thought originally that, hey, look, you're obligated to do the mitzvah, so you're doing it out of obligation. I'm not obligated to do the mitzvah, and I'm doing it because I think it's the right thing. And that's why I'm doing the mitzvah. And he thought that that's better. And quite frankly, It's understandable. That thought process is understandable, right? Someone is obligated to do it, is doing it only because he was told to do it, right? Your kid takes out the garbage because you tell him to take out the garbage, okay? It's not because, it's only because he's being told to do so. However, if he figured out on his own, hey, I got to take out the garbage, it's the right thing to do, that's great. So this is what Rav Yosef thought. But hashta shama lehu de Rabbi Chanin damer Rabbi Chanin agadol mitzvah v'yosef mimi she'ena mitzvah v'yosef manda amar li ein alachik Rav Yehuda avdina yumatav l'rabbanan. So the Gemara says, but then he realized that it's greater to be commanded to do something rather than not be commanded to do something. That is a statement of Rabbi Chanina for reasons we're going to articulate in just a moment. But once he realized that, so then he says, no, now I have a rooting interest that the halacha does not fall like Rav Yehuda. And if somebody told me that the halacha does not fall like Rav Yehuda, then I'll sponsor Kiddush this week in Shul. My time de chimef gedina is le'agratfe, because once I'm commanded, so then I'm going to get more schar for doing the mitzvot, and I'd like more schar. So I changed my mind, I changed my entire philosophy. I'd like somebody to tell me that the halacha does not fall like Rav Yehuda, and that a blind person, in fact, is obligated in the mitzvot in the Torah. Okay.
What is
the anti-Yehuda
that excludes everything for the blind person?
It's a drasha.
What is its source?
The Gemara quote is here is a psukim that darshan it. It's a drasha. In other words, you're excluded from this, and once you're excluded from this, there's a whole bunch of links that link it to all the mitzvahs in the Torah, and then your Rav Yehuda basically gets to the point where totally excluded. Okay. A couple things I'll bring out. I'll speak out over here. Some of them are popular, some are a little bit less popular, but let's deal with something that Ben raised a couple of minutes ago. According to Rav Yehuda, a blind person is excluded from all the mitzvahs in the Torah. Okay. And we saw the Amor Rav Yosef had take a rooting interest originally that the halacha should follow like Rav Yehuda. Okay. According to Rav Yehuda, where a blind person is exempt from all the mitzvahs in the Torah, does that mean, I mean, it seems this way, I'm setting up a question, does that mean that according to Rav Yehuda, you can literally have a blind person do whatever he wants, meaning violate any issur in the Torah, be non-compliant with any of the mitzvahs in the Torah? Does that really mean that? Now again, this seems to be, that's exactly the point. The answer, of course, would be yes. If you take a look at Tosfos over here, Tosfos on Pezayin Amad Aleph, the second Vechein Hayar Rav Yehuda Potro, right? Tosfos had two different points to make. So it's Tosfos number one and Tosfos number two on the same Dibra HaMaschel. So the second Tosfos over here, if you take a look at that Tosfos and you look to where the lines start getting wide, so he writes as follows. Vinira, it is towards the end of the line, the fourth wide line of Tosos. Vinira da'afagav de patra Rav Yehuda, summa mikol mitzvos, even though Rav Yehuda exempted a blind person from all the mitzvos in the Torah, mikol makom midrabanan chayev. Tosos now is going to make the argument. Now again, by the way, this Tosos over here is a little bit more analytical, conceptual than it is practical, because we don't pass like Rav Yehuda. We pass like the other Tanayim. But if we were to pass like Rav Yehuda, so this is a more theoretical point of Tosos, but if we were to pass like Rav Yehuda, Tosos makes the following observation. I think, says Tosfos, mikom makom midrabanan chayev. I think that the rabbis would still impose an obligation on the blind person to be compliant with the mitzvah. So meaning, he would be obligated in the mitzvahs of the Torah, albeit on a rabbinic level. Why? Here's the argument. The afagav the isha mifter rabbi mitzvah says eshaz man grama. Now it's true that women are obligated. Women are exempt from time-bound mitzvahs. And that's true. And once they're exempt, the rabbis don't kick in with a, yes, they're exempt, but you know what? They should do it. And let's obligate them rabbinically. Now, if they want to volunteer to do so they absolutely can. But in terms of a rabbinic obligation, there is no rabbinic obligation. So Tosfos is basically saying, so it's going to be a little bit tough on my theory. Meaning, I think the rabbis force the blind person, compel the blind person to be chayv and mitzvos, albeit on a rabbinic level, even though they did no such thing with women. However, Tosfos goes on to write, and Tosfos says there's going to be a fundamental difference between women and blind people according to Rav Yehuda. You see, when it comes to women, they're obligated in most of the mitzvahs in the Torah. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if you were to remove the time-bound mitzvahs in the Torah, you're talking about a couple dozen mitzvahs maximum. But they're still going to be obligated in most of the mitzvahs in the Torah. So basically, their Yiddishkeit is going to be predicated on the fact that they're still going to be bound by the vast majority of the mitzvahs in the Torah. Aval suma ipatartelim mikol mitzvah safilim midrabanim can have a kamo nachri she'ein noig b'toras yisrael klal. But Tosfos goes on to write, but if we were to allow the Summa to be exempt from all mitzvahs in the Torah, again, if we were to follow like Rav Yehuda, if we were to exempt the Summa from all mitzvahs in the Torah, so then effectively there would be nothing Jewish about him. Meaning you can call him Jewish, and he is, but there'd be effectively nothing Jewish about him, as he would be exempt from every single mitzvah in the Torah. And Ein, I'm just rereading the punchline of Tosfos, the critical line of Tosfos, Shein Noig B'Torah Yisrael Klal. He has absolutely no connection to Torah, as he's exempt from all the mitzvahs. Olakach, Tosfos goes on to make other points which are also super interesting, but I want to streamline this whole discussion. Tosfos therefore makes the argument that even according to Rav Yehuda, a blind person would be chayv in the mitzvahs on a rabbinic level.
How about Shem Mitzvah and Noach?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. Okay. This Tosfos is really the springboard for a lot of discussion. The other point I'll just raise very quickly, and then we'll move on, is the famous classic debate that takes place between the Balei HaTosfos and the Rambam. The Balei HaTosfos, you're not going to see this discussion over here. You will see this discussion occurring in the Gemara and Kedushin where this topic comes up. And Tosfos discusses it in a number of other places as well. It's just not here. But anyway, Tosfos has the following discussion. When Rav Yosef had a rooting interest in saying that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, would that mean that he was going to voluntarily do the mitzvos? And does that... yes, by the way, to that question, he was going to voluntarily do the mitzvos. Was he going to make a bracha when he voluntarily did the mitzvos? So Tosfos makes the argument a number of places throughout Shas, of course he was going to make a bracha. Meaning so that when he voluntarily complied with the mitzvos in the Torah, so he was totally intent on making the brachas. That's Tosfos' argument that he makes a number of places throughout. And Tosfos says, now if I'm right about that, so then that would also mean that if a woman does a mitzvah that she's not obligated to do, she'd be allowed to make a bracha. So when a woman takes a lulav on sukkah, so she's allowed to make a bracha. When a woman sits in the sukkah, she's allowed to make a bracha. Because, says Tosfos, even though they're not obligated to do the mitzvah, nevertheless, you see from the behavior of Rav Yosef, again, it's built on an assumption. The Gemara didn't say this, but if Rav Yosef were to have followed the halacha like Rav Yehuda and he were voluntarily do the mitzvahs, of course he'd be making a bracha. Same thing regarding a woman would also be making a bracha if she volunteered to do a mitzvah saseh. That is Tosfos' opinion, and it's not only Tosfos' opinion, it's the Ashkenazic practice in which when a woman does a mitzvah that she's not obligated to do, so she'll still make a bracha sa mitzvah. On the other side of this issue is the Rambam. The Rambam writes, and this is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam writes, no, that a woman is not going to be making a brachas a mitzvah when she's doing a mitzvah that she's not obligated to do. Sephardic women, if they sit in the sukkah, if they take lulav and esrog, if they hear shofar, they're not going to be making a bracha. It's great that they volunteered to do a mitzvah, that's praiseworthy, but they're not going to be making a bracha. Consider, says the Rambam, well, how does the bracha go? Asher kiddush anu b'mitzvos av vitzivanu, you commanded us. By a woman, it's just simply not true. They were not commanded to do a time-bound mitzvah. So the Rambam's of the opinion they're not going to be making a bracha. The summer, one of the halachas that I read from the Yalkut Yosef was that he was of the opinion that not only should Sfardim not make a bracha on a mitzvah sase, they shouldn't be answering amen. If they heard, he wrote this. It makes sense. If a Sephardi hears an Ashkenazic woman making a berachas a mitzvah, so a Sephardi shouldn't even answer amen. For them, that's not an appropriate bracha. Okay. Yeah, I don't. Let's not go that far. I mean, I'm Ashkenaz. I'm a little sensitive to this. So I wouldn't go that far. But I understand his argument. It's not for them. For them, it's not a bracha. Yes. Yeah, but they commanded us to do so. In other words, we're beyond that point. We're talking about mitzvahs that there's no command whatsoever to do. It's simply voluntary. It's nothing. Meaning it's not a rabbinic obligation, it's not a Torah obligation. I'm doing so because I'd like to do so. Which again, they have the volition, they have the option of doing so, but then is there a bracha that comes in tow? So that's it is a valid point. He's a Rambam. If he's making a very valid point, what's the counter argument to that?
Right.
Okay, you know, that's that's worthy of a shir. Rabbi Lanner gave shir on this a bunch of years ago, but okay, that's. The Baal HaTosfos position needs more defense. We're going to continue in the Gemara. Okay, Pei Zayin Amud Aleph. We are halfway through the Amud. We are starting with the Mishnah. Zechomer Ba'adami Bashur. Okay, his classic Mishnah, where the Mishnah does its comparisons, contrasts between various types of nezek. This is a stringency when it comes to people than that of animals. Sha'adam Hashem nezek saripo yeshavas uboshas. O Mesham demei vlados. When it comes to a man doing damage, they're going to be paying when a man damages another man. Or a woman, for that matter. In other words, we're just talking about people. So they're obligated in the five payments, and furthermore, they're also obligated in paying Demei Vlados. We spoke about Demei Vlados in the past. However, when an animal damages a person, so it's only one payment of Nezek, meaning obviously the owner of the animal, that kind of was obvious, and also there's no payment of Demei Vlados if the animal causes a miscarriage in a woman. We heard this mission already before, but this is now the mission we're reading inside. A person hits his father and mother, but does not cause a chabura, does not extract blood in the wound, and somebody who hits his friend on Yom Kippur. So in both of these cases, it's not a capital crime, and because it's not a capital crime, so therefore there's no principle of kimle b'derabimine, and therefore there is going to be a financial obligation, chay b'kulan. Hachov of Eved Ivri, chay b'kulan. If I damage a Eved Ivri, now an Eved Ivri is a full-fledged Jew who is just indentured to work for somebody, but he's a full-fledged Jew, so then I have to make all the payments. Chutz min Shevis, with exception to Shevis, meaning in terms of workers' compensation, he doesn't own his employment. He's not the bialim, he's not the master of his employment. And so therefore I don't pay him the shevis. Now, as we discussed earlier, okay, I don't pay him the employment, the workers' compensation, but I need to pay his owner the workers' compensation. Someone's going to be losing on the work. So the Gemara here is talking about a case where your person hits his own Eved Ivri. So he now is the owner of the Shevis, and so therefore he doesn't have to pay it, because then he'd be taking money out of his right pocket and putting it in his left pocket, and what would be the point? A person hits an Eved Kanani belonging to others, he's obligated in everything. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ein La'avadim Boshes. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that an Eved does not have Boshes. Rabbi Yehuda basically excludes a bunch of people from bunch of people. In the course of this morning, we have seen Rabbi Yehuda exclude a Sumer from Busha, Eved Kanani from Busha. Okay. Cherishot Bekatan Begasim Ra. Whenever you have any interaction with somebody who is a Cherish, a deaf mute, a Shota, someone who's insane, or a Katan, or a minor, so an interaction with them is never going to go well. Okay, as a professional teacher, I can almost attest to that. That's not true. So the joke was funny, and it was there. So hachova b'hem chayev. Now, if you damage them, you're going to be obligated. V'hem shechavah b'achem patur. Now, if they damage, they're going to be exempt. Okay, so in other words, it's a one way street. It's a win lose, win for them, lose for you a prospect. However, ha'eved va'isha b'gi'asam ra. Now, as far as an eved kanani is concerned and a woman is concerned, so again, an interaction with them also is not going to fare well financially. Ha'chova b'em chayiv. If you damage them, you're going to be obligated. V'hem shechavlo b'acherim peturim. Now, if they damage others, they're going to be exempt. Aval misham la'acher zman. Now, in the current state of not having money, so they're going to be exempt, but there is a latent obligation, there is some sort of account payable. It's just right now they don't have the money, they're not going to pay, but in the event that their status changes later in life, the woman becomes no longer a married woman, the Eved Kanani is no longer a slave, so then that will realize the obligation. The mission just simply speaks out that if the woman is freed, I mean, you could say that, but if the woman's divorced, or if the Eved Kenani goes free, so then they're going to be obligated to pay. Hamake avi v'ima vasamem chavur v'chavur b'chavur b'shabbes pater mikulam in meshuhu nidam b'nafsho. If a person hits their parent and causes a wound, which is a capital crime, so then he's not going to be a financial obligation based on the principle kim leva derabim mine. Similarly, if a person hits his friend on Shabbos, so that's a capital crime. That's one of the 39 malachas on Shabbos. Although, to be fair and to be clear, the Gemara never tells us which one of the 39 malachas, and the Rishonim have a debate in terms of which one it should be, it should fall under. But okay, we don't have to know all that right now. All we need to know is that it's a capital crime to cause a wound on somebody on Shabbos, and so therefore there's not going to be a financial obligation because. Now, if you hit your own Eved Kenani, so you're not going to be liable for nezek. Mind you, of course, that if you knock out one of the extremities, he goes free. But in terms of the nezek of the payment, so you own him, so therefore there's no nezek payment to do to make. By mine Rebbe Elazar may Rav Chova bevaskatana shel acherim chavalami. If you hit a minor girl. That is not your own daughter, but somebody else's daughter. So there is going to be a chavala payment. That's not up for discussion or debate. There is going to be a chavala payment. Who's the address? Who is going to be entitled to that chavala payment? Mi amrin in kevin da'akni la'rachmana, shevach nurim la'av chavala nami da'avua. Now you know that the nature of the relationship, according to the Torah, between a daughter, a minor daughter, and her father, is that the father gets all the benefits, all the financial benefits of his daughter. He owns the financial benefits of the daughter, so maybe one can make the argument over here, therefore, that the chaval should go to the father. My time and daha apachsa mikaspa, because you devalued her by doing this damage, and therefore the father is going to be the one who is the financial owner of these rights, and therefore the father should get the money. Or Dilma, Shevach Nu'urim Hu Da'akni L'Rechmana Di Bailam Imsele L'Mukashchin Masi Maser. So the Gemara says, or maybe no. Maybe the reason why the father has the financial rights to the daughter is based on the fact that he can marry her off, he has the right to marry her off, and he can marry her off to whomever he wants. And even if the person is not suitable, now obviously the Gemara is not condoning. I mean, it's such an obvious point, but I'll say it anyway. The Gemara is not condoning. The Gemara is just simply saying that it's within the purview. It's within the rights of the father to do so. So therefore, the father has that financial benefit. However, of a chavala kevin di ibai mischaba ba lamatzi chaval lo kanyale rachmana. On the other hand, the father has no right to hit and inflict a wound upon his daughter, and so therefore, because he does not have the right, so maybe that financial benefit is not going to be steered and directed to the father, since he has no right to do that. Therefore, he does not get the financial gain if somebody else would hit his daughter. So right now, the Gemara is addressing the following question: a person hits a minor girl who has a father. So who's going to be? There's going to be chavala. There's going to be a payment to chavala. Who is going to be recipient of that chavala? The Gemara asked the question. Amar le, we're now on the top of Pezayin Amud Beis. Lo zach zator la'av elo shevach nu'urim bavad. So the answer is the only thing that the father gets is shevach nu'urim, only all the benefits that come from the daughter by itself, but not the chavala. Eisve, the Gemara asks the question based on a Mishnah. Chavah be'avad ivri chayv bekulan chutz men hashevetz mezman shu shalo. So the when you hit an Eved Ivri and you cause a wound on an Eved Ivri, so all the money goes to the Eved Ivri with exception to the Shevis. Again, the Eved Ivri is an indentured worker, so that means that all of his employment is directed to his owner. And so therefore the owner is going to get the Shevis. So the Gemara's question over here is as follows. We know that when a girl is a minor, so any work that she does, her earnings are going to go to her father. So we are making the argument right now that when you wound a minor girl, so she's going to be the address, she's the one who's going to be receiving all the money. The Gemara is just a little bit bothered by the fact that, wait a second, her earnings go to her father. So the Gemara's answer is very simple. Amar Abaye, Moderav B'Shevis, Demaisi Yedeha, Achas Bagros Davu Ahave. So the Rav Sheshes gives a very simple answer, and that is, Abaye gives a very simple answer, and that is that, okay, you're right. The girl herself is going to be receiving most of the tashlumi chavala. She'll be receiving most of the payments except for Shevis. The father owns her labor. The father, therefore, is going to get the worker's compensation. The Eisvei, the Gemara quotes another brisa, Chavav biv Noah gadol yitelo miyad. If a person hits his older son, so he gives him the money immediately. Meaning he owes him money and he gives it to him immediately. Biv no katan, if a father hits his minor son, yasalo segula. So you pay, but you don't pay your son the money. You put the money in a trust. Later, when I say later, I mean tomorrow, we're going to talk about exactly what the trust should look like and what should be the investment vehicle. But basically, you put the money in a trust and then you let the child collect later on in life. Hachova bevito katana pater. And then if the Brisa goes on to say that if you hit your minor daughter, you're going to be exempt. So, and if other people were to hit your minor daughter, so then they would have to pay the father. So it sounds like over here that there's going to be a full exemption. That's what it sounds like. A full exemption when a father hits his minor daughter. And it seems like the reason would be because the father is the owner of all that money. So basically, again, it's, he'd be taking money out of his right pocket and putting it in his left pocket. So the Gemara says, Hachanami b'shefes. But the Gemara's answer is, no. You misunderstood the Braisa. The Braisa wasn't talking about the full complement of payments that you make when you hit somebody. The Braisa was only talking about shefes, meaning shefes is the only thing that the father owns on his daughter, and that's the only thing that he's not going to have to pay. But all the other tashlumi chavala, that the father would have to pay his daughter. And again, if it's a minor daughter, so then you put in a trust and you let her collect later in life. But that's all the Braisa meant. The Braisa was not talking about the rest of the Teshlim. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up at the two dots. Just quickly to review. We spoke today about who is subject to Busha, who's not subject to Busha. Our Mishnah includes a person who is naked, a person who is blind, a person who is sleeping in Busha. The Gemara goes on to discuss the idea, the fact of what exactly Busha is. Is it an embarrassment? Or is it that I diminish somebody? I devalue somebody? The Gemara talked about possible nafkaminas. We spoke this morning about Shitas Rav Yehuda, where a blind person is excluded from all the mitzvahs in the Torah. Delved a little bit into this topic regarding Tosfos' assertion that there's still going to be a rabbinic obligation, according to Rav Yehuda. Rav Yosef's originally favoring the halacha to go like Rav Yehuda since he was blind and he wanted to voluntarily do the mitzvahs, but then coming to the realization that he wanted the halacha not to follow like Rav Yehuda because Gadol Mitzuva V'Yosa, Mimishena Mitzuva V'Yosa, one of the big lines of today's daf. And then the Mishnah's comparison contrasting animals doing damage versus people doing damage, and then talking about interactions between minors and adults and women and adults, and how it is one-sided fair financially.